there's a great popular song, Loving You Just the Way You Are. And we don't like to do that anymore. You know, we live in a throwaway culture where, well, she's okay or he's okay for a while. Yeah, and it's getting a little old, getting a little bald, getting a little chubby.
This time on Come Receive the Light, some very candid conversation about temptation and respect in the marriage relationship. What's normal and where do we allow it to take us?
My, look at that. Isn't that attractive? Okay, that's normal in the fallen state. The question is, do I then cultivate, obsess, nourish that thought in a way that would go down a wrong path? That's where the issue is.
I heard a pastor just this morning share a thought that relates to what we're hearing. As believers, sin tries to attach itself to us. As non-believers, they try and attach themselves to sin.
We're all tempted constantly. And that's okay, in the sense of that we expect temptation. But according to 1 Corinthians 10, we'll never be tempted beyond our strength.
Psychologist Dr. Albert Rossi will be back with us on this edition of Come Receive the Light to talk about the marriage relationship. With our host, Father Christopher Metropoulos, I'm Mike Trout. Thank you for joining us. Father Chris is the president of Hellenic College and Holy Cross Orthodox School of Theology in Brookline, Massachusetts. We'll also talk with the authors of a brand new study, a far-reaching study about growing the Orthodox Christian faith beyond the walls of the church.
I hope every parish prints it out and marks it up with all kinds of things and says, wow, this is something we need to look at. I personally have already begun some within my own diocese. This past week, I passed out the summary to all of my priests, and we went through it and said, you know, you recognize yourself here on both sides of the columns. And so we are going to form small committees that will start to look at this with the priests and try to make some changes.
We'll get to that conversation in just a few moments here on Come Receive the Light. Last week on the broadcast, if you heard that program, we talked about change within the Orthodox Church. It's always a scary thing, isn't it? But I love the thought that change is the way the future enters our lives. Keep that in mind as you listen to this discussion, this interview in just a moment between Father Chris and his guests. Again, this is Come Receive the Light, a broadcast outreach of the Orthodox Christian Network. We're on the web at myocn.net, and we're also listener-supported. Consider how you might join with us. Perhaps you'd like to become a partner with us, a financial partner. There are a number of ways in which you can do that. You'll find them all on our website. Just click on the Donate button there on the homepage. And now with our first guests, here's Father Chris.
Today we welcome to Come Receive the Light Bishop Gregory of Nyssa and Alexei Krindich, both regular contributors to OCN. Bishop Gregory of Nyssa is the ruling bishop of the American Carpatho-Russian Orthodox Archdiocese as a titular bishop of the Ecumenical Patriarchate. And Alexei Krindich is research coordinator for the Assembly of Canonical Orthodox Bishops of the United States of America, as well as the author of the Atlas of American Orthodox Monasteries. We have you both here today to discuss the Assembly of Canonical Bishops' latest study entitled Go and Make Disciples, Evangelization and Outreach in the United States Orthodox Parishes. Your Grace, let's start with you. The executive report says that without paying serious attention to evangelization and a missionary outreach, the Orthodox Church in the United States is likely to stagnate, lose its vibrancy and vitality, and even decline in numbers. How do you think the Orthodox Church has gotten to this place?
Well, Father Christopher, I'd say there are multiple factors involved in this development of the Church. I would say one of the factors is just demographics. We're growing older. In other words, we're living longer. That's a good thing. But we are producing fewer offspring. Say, 50 years ago, you had families with 8 or 10 children, and of course, they were all in the church, and the churches were full. But now our families have, let's say, less than 2 children per family. And so that's a factor. A second factor, I would say, is just the ethnic heritage of our churches. Most, if not all, of the first churches in the United States were built by ethnic groups. And for the longest time, and still today in a few places, you were a member of the local church because that's where your cultural group was. In fact, the church was the center of your life. Everything revolved around it, not just on Sunday morning, but the whole week, with activities that were going on within the cultural group. Then I would say in the late 60s, early 70s, and beyond, other people started showing up. They were either other Orthodox who were trying to find a local Orthodox church in the town they lived in, or maybe they were inquirers and eventually converted to the faith. And slowly we saw this ethnic dominance start to lessen. We also have an increase in the nuns, and not the N-U-N-S's, but the N-O-N-E-S's.
Right.
They're the people of our society at large who just do not connect with a local church. And we have to ask ourselves, where are our children? After they leave the home, they go to college, they get jobs, they move to other towns, but are they participating in the life of the church? Some of them are, but many of them are not. In fact, we have lost so many people that we don't know where they are. A fourth factor, I would say, in all of this is the fact that in our society, the belief in God is decreasing in a significant way. And then I would say a fifth factor is religious education. How well have we taught the faith to our children? And are we really creating active Orthodox Christians or just passive ones?
Okay. Alexei, let me go to you for a minute. The study was a rather large undertaking. Can you share with us how the parishes were chosen for the study?
Oh, absolutely, Father Chris. So what I really wanted to emphasize for our listeners, it was not a case study. It was a truly national study on Orthodox evangelization and outreach in America. First of all, we had parishes of seven jurisdictions participating. And we had a total of about 70-plus parishes. And those parishes were divided in two categories. About half of them were parishes that were selected by respective jurisdictions. They were not selected by Alexei Krintich, but they were selected, nominated by their respective offices of evangelization and outreach as parishes that do outstanding work in terms of evangelization and outreach. Now, we know Orthodox churches are not exactly famous for evangelization and outreach, but each jurisdiction has a few of those parishes which are really, really, really good at their missionary efforts and evangelization. And then five, six parishes were nominated by the same jurisdictions for purpose of comparison as their normal parishes. Not bad parishes, good parishes, maybe even growing parishes, maybe even with significant presence of children and stuff like that, but without special emphasis on this evangelization and outreach and missionary work.
Alexei, this is a very detailed and interesting report. Unfortunately, we can't cover it all today. Can you share a little bit about those four distinct features of religious education in exemplary parishes? Because I believe that's really, as His Grace referred, education is one of our biggest issues today.
Absolutely. Number one, in a typical parish, which is not outstanding, but just your normal parish, most of people who participate in religious education are children. Very few adults are involved. Parishes which are outstanding in their evangelization and outreach efforts emphasize importance of everyone's all adult member parish participation in continuous religious education. This is number one. Number two, the parishes which are just normal, just okay parishes, typically use materials for religious education which are provided by their dioceses, you know, national offices, etc., etc. The parishes which are outstanding in their evangelization and outreach efforts, they are much more creative. They look for a variety of sources of religious education materials. And they tailor their religious education programs for different demographic groups within a parish. And they create their own educational materials. They still use diocesan and national materials, but in addition to that, they are much more creative. Number three, in their religious education programs, the normal parishes simply provide religious education. But when we come to parishes which are outstanding in their evangelization and outreach efforts, they try not simply to provide religious education to everyone, but to train next generation of teachers. So double goal in a class. Not only you learn more about your faith, but you also learn how to teach other people about your faith. And this is unique for parishes which are outstanding. And the last feature, if you go to a normal parish, normally religious education is simply considered as a separate program, not related to other parish ministries and area of life. In parishes which are outstanding in their evangelization efforts, religious education penetrates all areas of the parish life. And I can talk more about it, but time is limited, and I just suggest that the readers read the report, and they will figure out how parishes do this.
Very good. Very good, Alexei. Your Grace, let me return to you for a moment and for some two final questions. What do you feel is the most important takeaway from this report for parishes?
Well, I would say that the most important takeaway is that it's sort of a wake-up call. You need to take the chart in the executive summary, review it as a parish, and see where you are. Where are you in demography of the membership? Where are you with the character of your priest? Where are you for religious education and parish governance? How about your system of financial contributions? What kind of programs and ministry do you offer? What are your relationships with the community around you? And what are your relations with the non-Orthodox that we encounter? You just have to check and see where you as a parish are, and then you have to get to work improving the areas where your parish may not be very strong and maybe even very weak. Take that information and try to improve yourself. All the parishes are in different places, we know that. And I would say that some parishes would say, well, we're at the best at everything, we're not going to improve at all. I would say, look a little bit closer at things and just tweak them, if nothing else. And so I will leave it at that.
And let me just ask you one final question. And it's somewhat what we just talked about, but there may be a little more depth we can go into. How do you foresee these findings, which are many, affecting the Orthodox churches in America? I mean, within the Assembly of Bishops, do you think it will have an effect? Or will it be another tomos, another volume that sits on a shelf?
Well, my hope, again, is that it's not one of those that sits on the shelf. I hope every parish prints it out and marks it up with all kinds of things and says, wow, this is something we need to look at, or this describes us perfectly, we're okay in this area. I hope that the Assembly of Bishops, of which there are about 50 bishops of all the jurisdictions, will take the time to read through the report to see how their communities sort of line up, and some of them will line up exemplary and some of them just normal. That's not good, bad. That's just the characterization of the parishes. I personally have already begun some within my own diocese. I passed out the summary to all of my priests, and we went through it and said, you know, you recognize yourself here, or on both sides of the columns. And so we are going to form within the parishes small committees that will start to look at this with the priest and try to make some changes.
So it means we're going to be a little bit vulnerable here, but vulnerable to growth. And yes. I think that's a very, very good position to be in. Your Grace, thank you so much for being with us. Alexei, thank you as well. Alexei, would you give us the location of this report if someone would want to go and see it online?
Absolutely. The report is posted on Assembly of Bishops website, which is assemblyofbishops.org. There is a page which is called Research and Statistics. And so if people click on these links on Research and Statistics, they would have access and they can download both full study report and executive summary, which is just 7 pages, but gives people excellent idea of what they will find in the study report. www.assemblyofbishops.org.
Thank you so much.
Well, as I usually do, I have gone to that website just to check things out ahead of you going there. What you do is you click on the news link on the homepage and then select Research and Statistics, and that will open up the report. Again, the website is assemblyofbishops.org, and we'll have all those links on our homepage at myocn.net. That's myocn.net. I'm Mike Trout. You're listening to Come Receive the Light from the Orthodox Christian Network. And now with our feature conversation, here again is Father Chris.
It's a great pleasure to have our longtime friend of the show, Dr. Albert Rotzi, back on the program with me today. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Father Chris.
We're here to talk about crushes and emotional affairs. Now, that may be a long program, Dr. Rotzi, but what do we exactly mean by that?
Well, defining a bit, we're dealing with married people who are having an emotional affair with someone else who is married or unmarried.
Hmm.
And even defining a bit more, we're talking about infidelity.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to talk a little bit about fidelity.
Okay.
What are we being unfaithful, unfaithful to, in marriage? And from our Orthodox Christian perspective, if we look at what's marriage about, what's the purpose of marriage,
right.
What are we faithful to?
Okay.
And say that it's Christ. It's Jesus Christ. It always comes down to Him. He chose my marital partner to bring me closer to the partner and the partner to me, and both of us closer to Him.
Mm-hmm.
So the essence of this marriage is a psychological, spiritual connectedness, real bond, unique bond, affection bond, to each other and to Christ. Now, infidelity is breaking that. It's very attractive and very seductive and very romantic looking, but it's a lie.
It's so shallow, is it not?
It's so shallow.
Right.
It is shallow, and yeah, it's shallow, but, you know, initially very attractive.
Still seductive, though. I was listening on my way to the studio today. I was listening to CNN on Sirius Radio, and I'm listening to this headline program where a gentleman gets out there, and he talks about all the stars and all the celebrities and about their life and when they got up and what kind of cereal they ate, like we really care about that. But apparently there are many people that do care about those things because these people have programs. People today fantasize about celebrities.
Mm-hmm.
But many people also fantasize about people who they know, their neighbors,
mm-hmm.
their coworkers,
mm-hmm.
other parents from
mm-hmm.
their child's school. I mean, what are some of the way these daydreams start and then grow? Maybe we look at the root cause. Maybe we can then deal with prevention.
Yes. At root, basically, it's the same paradigm as Adam and Eve. We're all living in this fallen state, and some say that Adam and Eve's great sin, pride, and it was a composite of motives. One of the big motives was sheer curiosity, the tree of good and evil. I wonder what it's like to know what God knows.
That makes sense.
So people in our culture, whether it's the neighborhood or the workplace or on the web, will find these kinds of new enticements come their way, and in that sense, it's usual in the fallen state. The problem is the growth, how people simply, unwittingly perhaps, allow these beginning attractions, these seedlings, the wrong kind of seedlings, to go the wrong way. And then, boom, what am I doing here kind of thing.
Right, okay.
Because it's very, very quick. The growth process in there is very, very strong.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a great popular song, Loving You Just the Way You Are,
mm-hmm.
and we don't like to do that anymore. You know, we live in a throwaway culture where, well, she's okay or he's okay for a while, and yeah, you know, getting a little old, getting a little bald, getting a little chubby. I think the common belief is that daydreaming about other people is normal. And once you're no longer in the honeymoon phase of your relationship, I think that might be true, don't you?
Yeah, certainly.
So do these thoughts then stem from unfulfilled needs? Does it even matter where they come from?
My opinion is it doesn't matter, but we need to make a very fundamental distinction between temptation and sin. Everyone gets these kinds of thoughts. My wife used to say to me when she was alive, "Al, I'd like to spend one day inside your head."
Hmm.
I said to her, "Honey, I wouldn't want you in that jungle. You know, I love you too much." We're all tempted constantly.
Right.
And that's okay in the sense of that we expect temptation. But according to 1 Corinthians 10, we'll never be tempted beyond our strength.
Yeah.
So the point is, yeah, we will romanticize. Oh, my, look at that. Isn't that attractive? Okay, that's normal in the fallen state. The question is,
do I then cultivate, obsess, nourish that thought in a way that would go down the wrong path? Okay. That's where the issue is.
And that temptation, I think part of the problem we're facing is that people feel that the temptation then taints the image of God that we're created in, mm-hmm. and then therefore we cannot have his likeness, which is the second step.
That's right.
And I would say, I believe I'm correct here, that the temptation does not in any way taint the image that's been placed there. That's a divine image given to us.
That's right. That's a divine image. And in fact, the temptation, when surrendered to God and resisted, makes us stronger and more into that image. Right. The temptation itself is a gift from God for us to handle and turn back to him and not give in to and be stronger because of it. So we don't worry about the temptations that come to us. We pray to God. We're not going to be tempted beyond our strength. So the image doesn't get tainted by the temptation at all.
My grandfather was from the area of Thrace in Turkey. And when he came over, he would say to me in Greek, "Tomati ine ahortato," the eye is insatiable.
The eye is insatiable.
I mean, and that's the truth, isn't it?
That's the truth. That's the truth. And with our eye, our gaze at another person, we can either look at that person as a person after the temptation goes and relate to that person eye to eye, lovingly, me and her in God's image, or I can have this insatiable eye and gaze at her in a way that, in that sense, wants to use her, and perhaps she wants to use me for mutual stuff, and then it becomes insatiable, and then it takes a life of its own.
So what happens when that crush, or whatever we want to call it, is reciprocated? People, they're in the relationship, they begin to seek out time together, they find themselves on Facebook, and what's going to happen now?
Here I am. That question, embedded in that question, is another question. What are the diagnostic signs of this? What would be a healthy relationship, and what is over the edge? And there's a really good book. I must admit I haven't read, but I read the reviews. There are 94 reviews of this book on Amazon, and I am prepared to, on the radio, recommend it by Shirley Glass, called Not Just Friends. I'll repeat that a little bit later, but she says that the signs of an emotional affair are, first, emotional intimacy, when two people share who they are, their hopes, dreams, frustrations, and failures with another person more than they do with their spouse. That's a danger signal. The second sign is secrecy and deception. Mm-hmm. Are you telling your spouse that you're meeting this person and talking about these things with this person? And the last thing that's really important is there's a certain sensual chemistry. There's an attraction. I really look forward to having lunch with her. I really want that. And all of this, it can be and is an affair without touching. And people these days in our sex-saturated culture, many married people have discovered one thing about sex, that sex is, in a cultural sense, overrated, that we're more than just bodies touching. It's psychological and spiritual.
Right.
So many people are bypassing the touch because they, in a selfish sense, know the consequences of that. There ain't too much there once you're married and can do that with a spouse, that really there's the psychological, spiritual, unique bond that's created with that act.
Well, there's also, Dr. Rossian, you're a married man. Of course, you're a widower now, but, I mean, you can relate specifically to what I'm going to say. When we go to the youth conferences, and usually 9 times out of 10, the subject is brought up is sex. How active are you going to be? How active should you be? What should you do? Blah, 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 blah. I'm not going to go into all the individual things. But we remind the children and the young people that, look, okay, sex is a wonderful thing, blessed by God, within the marriage bond. But that's not what you're doing 24 hours a day.
No.
It's a small, small part of your life.
Right.
It's been blown up to be like the number one thing about people's lives, and it's not it.
That's right, it's not it. It's 1/1000th form of communication between man and woman. And man and woman communicate by a blink, by a look, by a touch on the cheek, by the way they negotiate money and friends and in-laws and children. They communicate by talk and not verbally, and they communicate by sex. But yes, Father Chris, it's only one form of communication among many.
And there's so much to be said for the married couple that is loving and caring for each other and watching each other and having the other one person grow and encouraging mm-hmm. one another as we go by. And it's not about throwing out the relationship. It's nurturing it and making it better, is it
That's
not?
That's right. That's right. It's about that's exactly right. It's about nurturing and making this relationship, which is really, I'm beginning to understand, it's really, I am my partner. I am just wonderful. Yes, it's about making this better, but the only way to do it is to stay faithful with this person totally mm-hmm. and not be frittering some of my affection energy with somebody else. Because once I start to fritter it away with someone that I really have these attractions to, oh, this person's really nice and understands me, then back in my marital relationship, that de facto must decrease some. That must suffer because I don't have as much to bring to my partner.
Right.
It's leaking over in this other way.
Okay. What can we say to a listener who can identify with a lot of the behavior that we've talked about here today? I mean, what would you advise them to do?
Mm-hmm. Both the listener who can identify and, more importantly, the friends who know people like this.
Mm-hmm.
Most
okay.
people in this situation are delusional. They don't even know from the fog. So what to do? So the friend needs to say this to the person doing this or the person doing it. That first thing is to talk to an elder, pastor, spiritual father or mother, a trusted elder, about what's going on. That's usually missing. One must talk about it frontally with somebody that one can trust. The second thing, one must pray. I mean, first one must pray. The second, one must talk about it. Then I would say this book that I'm recommending, I'll say again, by Shirley Glass, G-L-A-S-S, Not Just Friends. I would suggest that the friend of someone in this plight or someone in this plight get this book, Prayer, Open Talk with Somebody. An education by reputable sources is the beginning, the gradual step out. Mm-hmm.
So we're saying that if a person has these feelings or is moving in this direction, that it's not the end of the relationship, that they can begin to heal themselves
after
an emotional affair and even heal their marriage.
That's right. They can begin to heal themselves, heal their marriage, and if they do it properly, the marriage can become stronger because of the cut. The scar tissue can be stronger than the skin that's not scarred. Mm-hmm. They can heal.
From your experience, Dr. Rossi, what do you think is so special about the theology that encompasses the sacrament of marriage?
Well, that's a great question. And the specialness of the Orthodox theology about marriage is Jesus Christ. It's the freedom that comes with this. It's the love. It's the growth in love. It's my ability to look in the mirror and know, no matter what else is happening around me, I am becoming a person of integrity. I know that. I know that I'm loved. The only thing in life that really counts, really, is the awareness that I am loved and I can love because we're made in God's image and He's love. And married people can look in the eyes of their partner and know, sexually or not, that they are loved and can love. And that's what everybody's looking for.
Dr. Rossi, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much, Father Chris. Have a good day.
What great content. And what a wonderful message or interview to listen to again. You can do that very easily when on the website, just click the Listen button on the homepage and then select Come Receive the Light. Again, the website is myocn.net. I'm Mike Trout. Our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos, the president of Hellenic College and Holy Cross Orthodox School of Theology. This is Come Receive the Light, a broadcast outreach of the Orthodox Christian Network, a nonprofit ministry reaching around the world with the help of folks just like yourself. If you're not already a member of our financial support team, consider that, please. You can find out all about how you can join with us when you click on the donate button on our homepage, again at myocn.net. Join us next week for another edition of Come Receive the Light. And in the meantime, remember to always have faith in what you listen to.